the esteemed federal defense attorney, Mike Leonard. And I put esteemed in front of that because today was a sandwich day. Thanks, Mike Leonard. I appreciate it.
That's all it takes is to get some praise just to bring you a potbelly sandwich, which was kind of cold by the time I got here.
That's okay. I like it a little cold.
We need to start out with a dedication of the show, though.
Okay.
Our most loyal and longtime listener,
okay,
who never complained, never said a bad word, never had any criticism of us, no matter how we did.
Despite there's plenty of room for criticism, by the way.
Is now deceased, my dog, Violet.
Oh, no, Mike.
Yeah, very loyal to the show.
Let me turn on Patrick's mic here. It's Patrick Dolan, our employment lawyer as well.
I'm sorry to hear that,
Yeah, that's
Mike.
Too Thank bad. You, yeah. How many years?
It was about 12, yeah.
That's
so it was
like,
a little bit unexpectedly fast towards the end there.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah. So we're still a little bit in mourning. I picked up today, sadly, they give you the paw prints. I didn't know that. This is the first dog I've ever had in my whole life.
Oh.
So you give you those paw prints, and they also give you the urn with the cremation,
yes,
which is weird too. But
yes.
Well, some people like that. They like to know that they're in the family.
Yeah,
room,
I actually kind of did appreciate that. I kind of like the paw print thing too, although it's weird.
It's not weird. I mean, it's just it's sweet.
It's a keepsake.
I get what you're saying.
I actually like it, but it's just still kind of.
That is really tough. The death of a pet is really difficult.
It's the first dog in my entire life. I never had a dog as a kid.
Oh.
I was kind of afraid of dogs as kids because we had that was back in the 70s where dogs were allowed to attack you.
Exactly.
So I grew up like
legally
in a defensive posture.
Yes.
You know?
Very 70s.
Yeah.
When dogs when dogs lived half outside, half inside.
Yeah, it was not on a leash, no fence.
I thought that was pretty cool, except, you know, certain dogs, they would literally bite you back then.
Nobody would do anything about it.
Yeah.
We didn't have dogs growing up. We had two cats, Tiger and Teddy. They were brothers.
Oh, so sweet.
And they lived to the tender age of, I think, 26.
No way.
Yes,
really?
Something like that. My mom can answer. My parents got them before they were married in the early 70s or mid 70s. So when I was, they didn't die until the late 90s. And they died within 2 days of each other.
Wow.
I think the other one was so heartbroken. But point is, they were indoor-outdoor cats.
Yeah.
And so we just would leave the garage door like a little bit open for them to get warmth, and they'd be inside sometimes, but then they were mostly outside. Tiger was so smart, they would walk with me from my house to Hillcrest Elementary School a half mile away.
Yeah.
The whole way.
That's really
some
cool.
days, and then get back home.
Some
and
said they even took quizzes for you, John. That's how you got through. So,
thank you, Tiger.
Yeah.
Teddy took the social studies.
Sure.
Tiger was
He's
better with the
strengths.
Mathematics. Yes. I didn't mean to trump your story with my story.
No,
by the way,
no,
Mike,
it's okay. I just wanted to get that out there and do the dedication.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of weird.
Yeah. Patrick, any bad news in your life?
You want to bring us down
while we're already down here?
Well, I'm a little bit concerned because I had dogs, had dogs my whole life, and I absolutely love dogs. My daughter has dogs, but my wife loves cats. So we have two cats. They're only like 9 or 10. I don't even know how old they are, to be honest. You just said yours lived to 26.
Yeah, they're going
to
outlive you, Patrick.
Oh, gosh. That's a lot of... That's
I'm just kidding. But yeah, no... But maybe not. But our cats were special. I don't know. Maybe being outdoor and then
maybe
them hunting their own food a lot of the time.
Like, pets are great. Pets are cats, dogs, whatever. Yeah. It's all good.
Six-year-old says, I never thought you would be an irresponsible cat owner. Wow. First of all, I was 10 years old. I would not consider myself the cat owner. If you have a problem, you can talk to Mike and Marsha, and they will immediately shun you away because a lot of people had outdoor cats.
Of course.
Indoor-outdoor cats.
They still do.
Oh,
no
doubt. They still do.
I know
the
a lot
cats
of people.
They lived 26 happy years on this planet. Yeah. I don't think there's anything irresponsible about that. We would have food in the garage that they'd come. They'd sleep in there. And we had, like, shed in the back, too. Like, there was a lot.
Listen,
they could
that's
get inside
a nice
anytime
life.
They wanted to.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't think that's being irresponsible at all. But if it is... That's Mike and Marsha's problem. So 630, I'll forward this note over to them and see what they have
John
to say.
John had nothing to do with it.
Boy, I'm getting defensive here already.
Wow, very early. Well,
jump into it.
We'll represent you, John. Yeah, it's weird to think back, like, you know, in say mid-70s, late-70s, I'm in junior high, high school, whatever, early 80s. And the fact that dogs did just kind of walk around the neighborhood,
yeah,
and same for cats for sure. And, you know, some of them had to be leashed to protect everybody. But, you know, even then, not always.
But so did kids. Like in the 70s, you just wandered around your neighborhood.
It was definitely latchkey for both pets and
gosh,
kids.
Yes.
Loved it.
When we got home at like 3 or 4 from school in Evanston, we just walked into an empty house and we were in grade school. We let the dog out who just ran around the neighborhood. So did we. And that's pretty much how our afternoon was until our folks got home from work.
6 year-olds followed up. It's irresponsible because cats are not part of the outside world. They're meant to be inside, not outside. There are 500,000 feral cats in the city of Chicago right now. There's 500,000. They've counted them. Suffice to say, there are a lot of cats of the outside world. Second of all, I was 10, and it was the 80s where anything flew. Like, no matter what. Speaking of flying, the 773, birds live long. My cockatiel Floyd is 28. Wow. Macaws live to 75 years old. And if we go down this bird lane, we're going to get the wonderful WGN listener who has a parrot who I think is in their 70s who paints. And they start texting in pictures of the painting that the parrot does.
Wow. Okay.
That happened one day when I was in for John Williams.
I'm curious about that.
About birds?
Parrots painting.
Parrots painting. They can paint.
Did not know that.
I mean, really, anything you strap a paintbrush to can paint. I mean, really.
I don't know.
I mean, parrots are smart.
I don't think I can.
Elephants, I've seen things in them painting as well. Yeah. Anyways, this is pet talk.
It's a slow law day. Let's face it. It's a slow law day.
Okay.
All right.
Three bears. Let's just talk to the bears.
Any other pet comments?
A lot from the 630 about cats, which I shouldn't, you know, look. I've done stories about how we have too many feral cats, and this is what the 6-year-old agrees with. We spay and we neuter them. That's responsible ownership. Guess what? Tiger and Teddy were spayed and neutered. They were fine, so okay. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. I need to reset this whole show. We'll get to some Bears and Packers after pet talk. We should get Steve Dale on the line for all of this. I mean, he'd be the expert on all this stuff. We'll get to your legal questions as well. I do want to talk about the lack of a tariff decision and these conspiracy theories that are flying now, Patrick Dolan, from a simple misunderstanding of how SCOTUS works. The 630, who's a great listener and always has chimed in, did point out that a lot of cats don't live outside anymore because the coyotes have really made their way into the suburbs. There's crazy drivers, and so it's recommended most cats live indoors. Oh, I agree. If I were to get a cat today, that cat would be in my house.
Yeah.
Oh, John's trying to make a comeback with the listeners all of a sudden.
a little bit. But I'm also saying I want to clarify, and if anyone's buying a cat, do not treat them like we did Tiger and Teddy. It was a way different time where it's way more acceptable for cats to be roaming around. By the way, the 6-year-old who doesn't agree with what I did, apparently when I was 10, making no decisions in the home, I seriously doubt an outside cat lived 26 years old. Trust me. I have photographic proof of them alive in 1975 and 1999. So that's 24 years that they live. So maybe not 26, but 24.
Can Tiger and Teddy, you know how you post on the website, you know, this podcast, you have like a picture? Mm-hmm. Can Tiger and Teddy be the picture?
Oh, that'd be sweet. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Of this today's podcast.
Or Violet. One or the other.
Well, let me text my mom, get pictures of Tiger and Teddy.
Speaking of animals, I think we're beating a dead horse right now.
Oh, Patrick.
Is it really true is it actually true that coyotes really eat cats? Is that true?
I don't know. I'm sure that
they attack dogs. I don't know about cats.
Never seen it, never heard it.
No, I've never seen it.
But are you out there looking for it, Mike?
No, but we do have a coyote or two in our neighborhood, which our neighbor just took a really cool picture of recently, but it looks kind of scary.
Oh, yeah, no, we have coyotes in our backyard walking across our deck fairly often. I would guess they go after cats. I just find it funny that you wonder if they do, having just never seen it yourself personally. Like,
it's never happened.
You're 15 years as a wildlife photographer. You never saw it, and so, God forbid.
That's what Mike's doing at night,
right
out there with his long lens.
And also, Patrick, point of order. Beating a dead horse. This is WGN Radio. When we get on something, we get on something. Okay,
apparently.
Okay?
I should know that it's by narrow. I should know that.
Never doubt where the listeners want to go with conversation.
I know. No, just go with them. I get it.
Exactly. Go with the flow.
Sure. Coverage.
312-91-7200 to please get us off this if you'd like to do so. Oh, SCOTUS. So earlier in the week, there was, it's hard to explain, but basically a notice that the Supreme Court would be releasing some decisions. There's some mechanisms in which they go through, in which the press has advanced knowledge that there's going to be decisions on Friday. I think it's just posted to their general website of like something's coming. The tariff decision was maybe anticipated, and then it drew all this media coverage like the tariffs are coming, the tariff decision is coming Friday. The markets are going to be all eyes on this, and they will be when it happens. And then SCOTUS didn't release it. And yesterday on social media, I saw about 10,000 conspiracy theories that they're delaying it, that, oh my gosh, they're not going to do anything about it. SCOTUS, does no one remember June, how that works? How we just wait every Friday in June and we never know what decisions are going to come. And then we all guess on, ooh, is this one going to come this day or not? And then they wait till the end of the year or the end of their term, end of June to release the big juicy ones. They're going to wait. This is going to take some time, people.
Yeah, it's different than lots of other appellate courts who that you have no clue when they're going to release opinion, or they might tell you, okay, on Friday, this opinion will be released. So I don't think there's any big conspiracy going on.
No, I don't think so either.
And the next set of opinions, I think, are going to be released on the 14th, right? So it may or may not be part of those rulings, but we don't know is the point.
Yeah, they just probably have to release it by the end of their term. Now, these are some of the cases that they argued on more of a fast-track docket.
Yeah.
And so they usually then fast-track those decisions. Well, I shouldn't say usually. That's generally how they go. And then the cases that they brought up in October and December for their longer debates – based on their regular order, those are the ones that are released in June.
So I think the argument was on November 5th, as I recall, right?
Yeah, and so it takes some time.
Yeah, so it takes some time. I mean, we still have a ways to go.
It's kind of like a secret how they operate, but most followers and reporters of the court say they all get together after the oral arguments, and they dive into it together, kind of going back and forth. And I take some solace knowing that they still do that. I think that's important that they just don't retreat to their chambers with their clerks. I like that they hash it out because I think what they try and do, and I know the reporting is on the John Roberts court, agree and disagree with all the decisions they've come up with. Those are all up for debate. But they do try, at least is how I understand it, to find some consensus. And if they can't, then they go their separate ways. Is that your read of it too, Mike?
I'm not sure if they're looking to find consensus other than to kind of and I push their own agendas and own points. I'm not sure they're looking to, hey, let's come up with a consensus here. But, I mean, I guess some people look at it that way. I'm not sure if I agree.
I'd like to think they still do. I mean, historically, that's what they've done. You know, if you got a couple justices who are very conservative, and I don't know if they're consensus builders, but a lot of the folks on the court right now, other than those two, I think are. So I think there's still some common ground they're searching for. They may not find it, but I think the effort is still made.
I mean, let's not negate the fact that the most common decision is a 9-0 decision still in the Supreme Court, right? I mean, it's not the majority. It's the mode. It's about, last time I checked, about 40% of the decisions are still 9-0.
Did that number change over time? Because it seems like with Scalia and Thomas.
A lot of 7-2s.
Yeah, a lot of 7-2s.
But right. I'll have to update on maybe the last 2 years it's changed a little bit. But that has been the majority, or not the majority.
I just thought maybe recently it's not.
The plurality of cases are 9-0. Mm-hmm. So I think that on some of these high button issues, of course, you're going to see. And now it's a lot of 6-3s, of course, which is what you're going to have. But I think what they try and do at first, at least as the reporting is John Roberts, is to see if there is any common ground. If there's not, then of course you're going to get these split decisions. Because maybe you can cobble together, and we've seen even this court have some odd majorities of 5 mm-hmm. that have come together. Amy Coney Barrett seems a little bit more willing to play both sides is the wrong term, to agree with some of the liberal justices. You've seen that from Elena Kagan has found some common ground with some of conservative justices from here or there. And I know that angers people on both sides when that happens. To me, that's a sign of a court doing what it should be doing.
It's Kavanaugh, but
agreed.
I mean, Kavanaugh, I guess but I guess my point
and Gorsuch with a lot of Native indigenous people
very
cases
much so.
Too.
Well, this is history in Colorado, but you know, Alito and Thomas just don't do that.
Not as much. Neither does Ketanji Brown Jackson, and Sotomayor mostly. I'm just making the point that you have two justices on each flank. I'm not saying one is. Some are closer to the middle than others. I think that is the case. But
I get it.
We digress.
It's kind of ironic that there's such criticism about the polarization of the court and its politicalization. And then if someone tries to go to the other, allegedly the other side, then they're criticized for that, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly. 312-981-7200. All right. We got 3 minutes here before the news. I don't want to start a new legal topic. So let's talk a little Bears-Packers.
Oh, we have to.
Where are you sitting? Where are you eating tonight, Mike? That's what I want to know.
3 minutes is not enough.
Okay? I know. Well, we'll have more later. I'm just saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I will. I love to go with, a variety pack. I love to have pizza, but I love to have wings.
Oh, boy.
But I love to have sandwiches.
So are you ordering all three? Are you making all three?
No decisions have been made. But, I mean, in terms of go-tos. But, I mean, I also like the traditional chips and dip, old school chips and dip.
Yeah,
but you haven't decided what's in front of your face
tonight.
Like
French onion?
No, because there's still some up in the air, and it's about where we're going and what we're doing. So I can't commit to you, John.
You don't know where you're going yet?
Well, we did, but then it doesn't sound like everyone's in. So I don't know.
I like to be at home. I like kind of lose my mind during these games.
Yeah.
And no one wants to see that.
Yeah.
So my son Noah and I, we're going to be home. My wife and daughters will probably be in a different room because it's just going to get ugly.
I like to yell and have outbursts and just kind of spontaneously yell.
With a lot
and
of
shout.
Snacks.
We'll be split rooms too.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a common in the kitchen, which is between the two viewing rooms. Charcuterie out.
That sounds great.
Cheeses.
Yeah.
Some Gouda, some smoked Gouda. I'm going to have
dips.
some.
chips.
Obviously, you have some dips, have some crackers.
Yep.
Got some salami. Got some...
maybe some grapes for a little fruit or something.
A little... And a pear. Cut up. Actually, I think it was pears delivered by you.
Oh, thanks.
You gave me a Fruit of the Month Club for David when he was born. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
I'm sorry, John. I would have... As a true football fan of Brisbane, I would... Unfortunately, reject entirely the charcuterie board. Sorry.
Are you kidding?
Sorry.
You really? Why?
Done. It's just not appropriate.
It's the same thing as pizza.
not
it's appropriate.
Just use a different phrase.
You sound like a U of I grad, University of Illinois grad, like trying to high
smart,
little highfalutin. What do you have? No. Champagne with that too?
Yeah, right. Because it's where we're down. Exactly. Yes, a little bit.
No.
How about you say cheese and salami or something? Yeah, except cheese, is that appropriate?
I sustain Patrick's objections and my objections to your charcuterie board. Tell Enrique or yourself to come up with a different
plan. You sound like an Iowa grad. I don't know where I'm going. Just give me some pizza and it's fine.
I'm also a loyal law grad, so that takes up another notch.
Wait, what are you eating, Patrick? As a Wisconsin
whole
grad?
Bunch of snot. No, not,
oh, no, not Wisconsin.
Your kids
went to Wisconsin.
No, I was the only one. My kids went to U of I.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I went to Wisconsin, but I'm not eating cheese. There's no cheese allowed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, 224 actually has a legal question. Okay. We'll get more into Bears Packers. Don't worry, we're going to touch it each half hour. Don't worry.
We're not going to revisit the charcuterie board. It's off.
Yeah, okay, fine. That's gone. John, I have beneficiaries named on all my investments. My house. Why do I need a trust or will? We get that a lot, 224. John Heggie would be best to answer these sorts of things. First of all, great. You have your beneficiaries named. Houses don't usually have beneficiaries. You might be talking about a TODI, which is a transfer on death instrument that you filed with the state. Either way, that's great. There's a lot of other things that are on the bank accounts, right? Where are those at? Are those beneficiaries labeled or not? There's a lot of things that are parts of a state that you may not have to be able to list as beneficiaries, that you may need a will or a spillover will or a trust about. Suffice to say, John Heggie is the best person to ask about that sort of stuff, 224. But I ask that question a lot to estate planning lawyers because I do the same thing. I've got beneficiaries listed. What's the problem? Heggie will line it up for you, and I'll drop their number in your chat line, 224. Patrick Dolan's to my left. He's an employment lawyer. You can call right now, 312-981-7200, with any of your employment-related questions. Mike Leonard's a federal defense attorney who's in the middle of dry January. And so you can call him with any questions about how that's going and how you're going to get through tonight's game that way.
Tough. Yeah, it kind of might be like, you know, the equivalent of when the Pope your local priest used to declare a dispensation for meat on Friday. Yes. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Coach Ditka can declare a dispensation from dry January.
The Pope should just do it. He's a Bears fan.
Yeah, I think he could do it. Yeah,
that's a great.
He could do it.
No, seriously, can we get him on the phone right now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Iridian, get the Pope on if you don't mind.
With John's connections?
Absolutely.
Not a problem.
I think it's with easy. Iridian's connections.
No, we can't
more likely.
Because John's a Cub fan. The Pope is a Sox fan.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to talk about that.
And Iridian's a Sox fan.
Oof.
Iridian, you're Catholic too, right? If you don't mind me asking. Yeah, exactly. She's got connections.
A Sox Catholic fan for sure.
I got nothing. I'm a Lutheran who hasn't been in a while.
Yeah,
I'm a Cubs fan.
I'm a fallen Catholic, so I don't know if the Pope's going to take my call.
Well, no, you're always welcome back, though. That's part of it, right?
True, it is.
That's
exactly.
Doors
the,
always
the churches'
open.
Doors right. are always open.
Yeah, always open, even for people like you.
Unless they're closed. Sometimes they're closed.
Yeah, they but like, people like
not
you.
Anyways, okay, so 312-981-7200. I think a lot of people are in Bears-Packers mode. I want to take the pulse of Chicago. How are you really feeling? I think a lot of people are giving, like, Bears win predictions to make themselves feel better. But let's not – and maybe there's a lot of people that are looking at the X's and O's or just feeling the vibes, and they're feeling the Bears. I'm making a Bears 23-20. That's the prediction I made earlier. Bears win 23-20. I will admit that that comes on a mountain of not dread, but like
trepidation.
Yes. Yeah, that's the right way to put it. I want to like put the positive vibes out there. Not that it matters, but I feel that could legitimately happen. I think the Bears can absolutely win this game. I put it as a coin flip, like the betting markets have it as. But it is the Packers, it is the Bears, and I think that comes with a lot of stuff. Ben Johnson, he's our guy. Love it. Caleb Williams, I love his second half, has been improving. I think a lot of people are a little more trepidatious because of the Lions game. Like, a lot of people were fine with the San Francisco loss. Obviously, the Bears looked good in that game. We were optimistic after that game. And then to come lay an egg, literally a goose egg for three quarters against the Lions, took us all aback. Now, they came back, and I'm glad they came back a little bit in that game. But So what do you think, Mike? Let's make a prediction here earlier in the show.
The Lions thing doesn't really bother me, because going into that game, I thought that was a game we could certainly lose, and I thought that Lions would be super motivated, especially with the Ben Johnson thing and him getting so much credit and people saying because he left, that's why their offense isn't good. So I thought that was a losable game, so that didn't really bother me. But the great thing about a playoff game now with the Bears is that you do have the idea and the optimism we actually can win.
Yes.
But I'm like you. I'm nervous as hell. I think everybody I know, my friend just texted me. He's like, he's the biggest Bears fan ever. And he's like, you know, in a fetal position. So, Dave. So anyways, I think it's going to be a nervous challenge. But yeah, I'm going to go. We all have to put our scores out there.
Yes, we do.
I'm going Bears 34, Packers 24.
Oh, big 10-point win.
Yeah.
Maybe closer out, Bears pull away towards the end. Is that what you're feeling?
No, they get ahead early, and then Packers close towards the end, but just not enough.
Okay. Patrick Dolan.
Well, I think it's really big that Kyle Gordon's back. He would have made a big difference, I think, in the Lions game, given he's a great slot corner cover. Adunze is back. That's really good. Caleb Williams, number one rated quarterback out of high school, Heisman Trophy winner. The guy has got, you know, ice water in his veins. He is unflappable. We will win this game. I don't have trepidation.
You have no trepidation?
No, we're going to win. We're going to win 27-24.
Mike, is that what he was saying?
It's funny, no trepidation, but it's only a 27-24 win.
They're not going to blow him
out. They're not going to blow him out, but they will win.
Did Patrick say that in the... Was he? I thought he was nervous before we went on the air.
Yeah, I agree. You know what I saw yesterday? You see that story, I think it was last night or today, there was a, this should have been shut down, but you know that bar, I think it's called Will's
Northside? Yeah, we wrote the story at Blood Club Chicago.
They had a Packers pep rally there yesterday.
Of course they did.
They should have shut that down.
Why?
The police, CPD should have come in and shut that thing down.
Wait, why do you say of course they did?
They're a Packers bar. North L's Northwoods. It's a great bar. It's awesome. It's on Racine. In Lakeview, a couple blocks south of Addison, it might even be on Wellington around there, 3000 North.
Whatever.
I love that bar. It's great to go to.
No, it's not. I'm not saying it's not a great bar. I'm just saying having a Packers pep rally, someone should have called CPD or called in a bomb threat or something.
No, I should hit the dump button on that, Mike. You're our federal defense attorney. Take that back right now.
I could represent myself. Yeah.
Please take that back.
I take it back. It was a joke.
I know.
You can have opinions and joke on the show, John. You take.
You can have opinions and jokes when the mics are not on, but when we got 50,000 watts blasting out, let's make sure that we do that. Okay, 312-91-7200. That's three predictions for a Bears win. And 224 says, hate to say it, I'm feeling like the Pack is just going to blow the defense off the field. Okay. That is a worry, of course. 847 says, not optimistic. Hey, I have an employee-related question for you, Patrick Dolan.
Okay.
630, if you are due a pension from 1980 to 1986 at the Red Cross, but they say they don't have records anymore, what can you do? So maybe you worked there for 6 years. That was enough to maybe partially qualify you for a small pension, and you worked for them. And I don't know the details, but I assume that's what the person is referring to. How would the Red Cross not have... I mean, they're an organization that's been around forever. What happens when that happens?
Well, I'm assuming he has nothing. He or she has nothing. I don't know how long they're required to keep pension-related documents, but does the pension provider also not have that? Who's the administrator of the pension?
That's what I would want to know,
too. Yeah, and so, you know, they should for sure.
So many people work jobs early in their careers for 7, 8, 9 years, for sure. Qualify for a small pension, and then retire 35 years
later.
That's where I would start. Yeah.
You know, the administrator of the pension find out who that is, and they should absolutely have records.
Yeah, if they don't have records, I feel like that is a phone call to you to dig around a little bit,
100%.
Right?
It doesn't necessarily have to be the employer. It's a pension provider.
Guys, perfect segue. Ooh. If you remember, John, yeah, I know you're going to remember. Okay. Patrick doesn't really pay attention to my cases, so he will probably remember. But about a year ago, someone called into the show.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
And it was a woman who's now my client, who was complaining that she worked for this dental practice in the suburbs, and they had a pension plan. And all of a sudden, one day, after many, many years, the dentist announced that all the money is gone.
Yep.
And so we brought a lawsuit on her behalf.
She listened to the show. She called you afterwards.
Correct. And so that case is currently pending. We had a development in the case recently. So we filed the lawsuit. And of course, the first attack is always a motion to dismiss, you know, saying, oh, you don't have a claim. You don't have enough specificity. You know, you can't prove what happened to the money, which is interesting. A big argument on motion was you can't say what happened to the money. You can't say that he did something wrongful with the money. That was their big pitch to the court. And so we had like a 5-count complaint, you know, different legal theories. And so the judge largely ruled in our favor. He got rid of a couple counts because we just don't have enough to show fraud. Mm-hmm. But we survived the motion to dismiss, and we're going to go ahead and get all these documents and records from the dentist and from third parties and take depositions, and we're going to have some good fun, John.
That sounds great.
That was horrific what happened to that woman. She was getting statements showing money there, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then one day they're just like, it's all gone.
Yeah, years ago she had gotten statements showing she had X amount in the plan, and then all of a sudden years later, like, oh, sorry, you know, you're close to retirement age now. Sorry, all the money is gone with no explanation.
So I do remember that case, Mike. I do pay attention sometimes.
Hey, pay attention and talk directly into the microphone. I've told you that three or four times.
Okay, thanks. What does he say happened, the dentist? What does he say happened to the money?
Are you allowed to go into this too
sure.
much?
Sure, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it's a public case.
What's his defense?
So, well, we don't know in particular. Really, you know, as you know, and maybe for listeners' benefit, when you file a lawsuit, you know, you make these allegations and you have different counts, different legal theories. But all the defendant has to do at that point is try to attack your complaint saying, well, even though you allege this, it's not enough under the law. Therefore, that count has to be dismissed. So the dentist doesn't have to take a position at this point in terms of, hey, here's what happened right. Here's what happened to the funds. And he can't simply say, I deny it, or there'd be no such thing as a lawsuit.
Hey, I just didn't know if the lawyer representing him told you.
No. Okay. So it's all a bit of a mystery.
Okay.
But we do have documents that suggest certain things that we'll talk about later in the case if it continues to go public like this. But yeah, we're excited for the WGN listener and for ourselves.
Good.
Worst dentist in history since Dr. Oren Scrivello. Wait, anyone get that reference?
No. Is that from a listener or from you?
That's for me. That was my joke.
Wait, Oren Scrivello?
Yeah, Scrivello, DDS.
What did he do?
Steve Martin famously portrayed him in the movie.
My two left feet?
No. What? Come on, guys. Little Shop of Horrors.
Steve Martin's done a lot of good work. I'm not familiar with that name, though.
You don't know Little Shop of Horrors?
No. Okay. The dentist name from Little Shop of Horrors.
Okay. Let's go to George. He's got an employment-related question for Patrick Dolan. Hello, George. Just remember not to say the name of the place where this is happening. Hello. Welcome to WGN.
Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Go Bears.
Mr. Dolan, go Bears. I have a situation at work, and there's a pattern that's been displayed at every quarterly sales meeting. During the question and answer period, people will ask questions to upper management or the CEO regarding the new changes regarding the sales program.
Okay.
The situation becomes there's some very detailed questions that get asked regarding the new programs and how to move forward, and upper management doesn't seem to understand the questions because they're very detailed. Thus, they become defensive and start picking apart your question like you don't know what you're talking about or insinuating that you're doing something wrong.
So this is like management versus employees. They're getting really, they're sick of your questions. They're mean about it. They pick you apart. Essentially, would you say that makes it a hostile work environment?
That's the question. It's already a pattern, but no one's addressed it yet.
Okay, Patrick, can anything legally be done about it?
Well, first
bosses
of all,
just being really bad at their jobs.
No, not generally speaking. But listen, if the employer wants to enforce that that plan, that sales plan, it has to be understood by the employees. So if they have questions and it's ambiguous to them, the employer's going to have a really hard time enforcing that plan against the employees. Of course, they should answer their questions. That goes without saying, really. But, you know, if they don't, then I would follow up. I'd have people follow up in writing in an email, because then maybe you set yourself up if they take action against you for a retaliation claim.
Right. Like if you're asking a bunch of questions and
they're like, suddenly you're fired, or right, suddenly you're not paid properly under that plan.
Put it in writing.
Yeah, put it in writing. Right. But later on, if someone asserts, I think I had a right to these particular monies under this plan, and they're like, no, you don't. Well, the company's going to have to show that there was no ambiguity, that the employee understood the terms of the plan and were thus not entitled to the money. So I don't understand why the company would not address the penalties. But I would put your issues in writing very specifically, each question.
And I think there's a way to do it where you say, look, we've had some meetings where this hasn't been as clear.
Yeah, just follow up.
I'm just going to follow up here with this.
Yes, 100%.
This is our questions. Maybe you could put this in writing and this will be a more fortuitous way to do it. So suffice to say, hostile work environment in and of itself, not illegal, but could set up situations in which people end up in legal situations based on how they respond.
Absolutely.
Okay, 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you want to follow up with Patrick Dolan, 312-332-7800. 773 says, Bears 24, Green Bay 22. They miss a last-second field goal. I'll have an automatic defibrillator near me at the end of the game. Boy, won't we all. Oh, let me put you on.
Heart attack inducer, but I would take that ending. That'd be awesome.
Hey, if we have more points than they do at the end, I do not care how we get there.
It is interesting, though. Everyone has a score pretty darn close. Yeah. That shows you the level of fear.
Of a fear of maybe of confidence.
Yeah.
It's close, but we'll
come
win.
Out. True.
We'll pull it out. I don't know. All right, let's take a break. More Let's Get Legal, Bears Talk, and everything in between on WGN. Mike Leonard and Patrick Dolan are arguing with each other here in the studio. Let's bring it to the microphone, boys. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. A couple other thoughts. 773, the game tonight, best viewed with a small glass of Whiskey Acres Maple Cream Bourbon nearby for medicinal purposes. I do like Whiskey Acres. Great stuff. And I'm not saying that just because they're a sponsor of the station, but really, seriously, it's good stuff.
Are they really a sponsor?
Oh, yeah. We've done events. John Williams will do events with them all the time out at their location. It's where we do like the speed jokes party of the year. I don't forget what they call it, what John calls it, but it's really fun. And they're great people. And
is it regular bourbon?
Yeah. They got different things. Like they have this maple cream bourbon, which is maybe sweet for some people's taste, but some people love stuff like that. They've got all sorts of stuff. The maple cream, I don't know if I've tried. I've tried the other ones, and I love it. And I'm not just saying that because maybe they'll send me a bottle.
What your listener is also telling you in parentheses was, no freaking charcuterie board in my house next to that glass of bourbon.
I love charcuterie. Okay, someone else had a similar experience on the text line about someone called in earlier saying that they had a pension. They should have a pension with, I think, the Red Cross. I probably shouldn't have named the company that they have this with, but they're going to have a future. The Red Cross is big enough. They're going to be okay. They worked there for 6 years. That probably qualified them for a little pension. It was 40 years ago. And now the Red Cross is saying, well, sorry, we can't do anything about that. Someone else said they had a similar experience with a small defined benefit. They had one piece of paper of documentation from 1990. The Department of Labor couldn't find anything. And this was a large international ad agency that was sold and claims no record. And so, Patrick, this isn't just a one-time thing. And I imagine if you linger and have 9 401ks from a bunch of different businesses, you're going to risk something like this happening to your 401ks, too, if you don't keep track of where they go, right?
Yeah, you got to keep track of that. You know, Mike's going to address one point of this. What I was thinking is, if the employer or the provider doesn't have information about the amount of the pension, if you can figure it out from how much you were paid in terms of your contribution, and that's, you know, sufficient, and it will be for most purposes, then the court or Department of Labor administrative judge will use your information as sufficient proof of the amount of pension that's owed to you. That's not a perfect...
Explain that like I'm 10.
Okay. So let's just say no one has any records.
Okay.
Like they don't, you don't, but no one disagrees that the pension exists.
Okay.
The question is, how much are we talking about? What you can do is go back and determine how much was contributed based on how much you made, and that's not very difficult to find out. And then the calculation can be made based on the records of your compensation, not specifically
your pension. So you can reverse engineer it.
Yes, okay. Not specifically your pension, but say these contributions were made annually in this amount, every however often, and then do the math that way. That's probably going to be sufficient for purposes of proof that a pension is owed to you.
What did you think, Mike?
I agree with everything Patrick said. No, we had another discussion of whether it'd be possible under the Illinois Code of Civil Procedure, you could file what's called an action in discovery, meaning it's not an official lawsuit, but it's a vehicle to get discovery that could provide the basis for your lawsuit. So could you use that as a vehicle to get, you know, subpoena these companies to try to get the records? But if the Department of Labor says there's no record of it, I'm not sure how successful you'd be, but it's at least something you could attempt.
Yeah, that's a good attempt. I was also thinking in terms of proof. If this is, you know, 2-3 decades ago, you could look at your taxes and maybe determine from reverse engineer, again, how much I made. This is how much my pension contribution was. There's lots of ways to get at your salary information historically. And from that, you can, I think, you know, make a logical conclusion about what your pension was and use that as the amount you owed.
I'm just trying to think of like people out there.
That's not the best case scenario, John. I'm just trying to think of
no,
ways.
I appreciate that. And people can follow up with you directly.
Sure.
312-332-7800. But I just wonder for anyone that might think they are due a pension and it was somewhere you worked long ago, I guess this is a recommendation. This is no judgment against the people that are having issues right now, but I don't know if there's a way to get on it now. Like trace down that pension now before more time passes to at least make sure they have your contact information, that there's no issues right now. Like if it was 10 or 15 years ago, you left a place and you have a pension and you're not going to get it till a certain age, call that old company. Be like, by the way, I just want to make contact with the people that are running the pension. Just, are we all good here? Is that an advisable thing to do?
Yeah, it's great. And then get some proof of what that pension is, how much you're owed, et cetera. And so then you have it. So there's no issue 10, 15, 20 years later.
Yeah, I mean, nothing beats the documents. Let's face it.
100%.
Yeah, so get some documentation of it.
Yeah, something.
Not just a yes on the phone. Be like, would you mind emailing me what I'm due? They probably have some statement of...
Yeah, they do. They should. Yes, they do. They should.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Michael has a question. Michael, you're on WGN. What is your question for these two?
Well, I wouldn't mind speaking about bourbon. Okay. If you haven't had George Stagg, not Stagg Jr., but George Stagg, it is the absolute best thing I've ever had in my life.
Wow.
Is that like in one of those really expensive bottles?
Like how much am I playing here?
Define expensive, but yeah, the answer is yes.
Like,
but you can't get it. So
okay, well, never mind.
You can go on the internet today and get it for maybe $750.
Okay, never mind. Wow. Pass. I like that. Michael, you give me a shot one day, okay? Not a shot, but a nice sipper, okay?
So, I would love to know, in your words, what do you feel is the biggest difference between a criminal and a civil trial? And also, which type do you like taking to trial?
Ooh, that's a good question. Biggest differences. I mean, there's a lot of differences, of course, Mike, the burden of proof being one of them. But give us one that you particularly find different and what you like about one or the other.
Well, the biggest difference probably is what leads up to the trial, because in a civil case, you're allowed to take everybody's deposition. So, you know, you've at length in state court up to 3 hours, in federal court up to 7 hours, sometimes even longer. You have examined this person under oath extensively. You've asked him everything in the world you could possibly do. You can confront him with the documents, whatever. So you have, you know, kind of a golden blueprint going in for trial in terms of what this person is going to say, how you can impeach them with their inconsistencies if they say something in trial that's different than their deposition, versus a criminal case, except for the rare exception, you're never ever going to have a deposition before trial. There's certain limited exceptions, like where someone's going to die and you could get the court's, you know, approval to take someone's deposition, or it might be a death penalty case, but otherwise night and day. So you have reports, you have witness statements, you have audio, video statements and stuff like that, but it wasn't subject to cross-examination. It's just someone telling, you know, their version of the story. No one's there to cross-examine them. No one's there to ask them follow-ups, get all the details. So in terms of preparation, you know, you're much more in the dark going to trial in a criminal case because you don't have this sort of perfect record and opportunity to have examined them. Also,
we got to get to the news, so save that also. But okay. I do know that you're going to say you prefer criminal ones over civil.
Oh, let's wait to make it more exciting.
No, you like fighting the man in open court. I love it. I know it. I know that's going to be the answer. Okay, Mike Leonard, federal defense attorney, Patrick Dolan, employment lawyer at 210 on WGN. Hi, everyone. John Hansen here on the second hour of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. / Bears Talk, / Sandwich Talk, / Pet Talk. It's been a wild show so far. Let's see where we get before 3 o'clock. Mike Leonard, before we get to your favorite segment, Shark Bites, we got to wrap up the conversation with Michael, our caller, who asked you about the differences between civil and criminal trials, which you laid out some, and then which one you prefer. I surmise that you prefer nothing more than walking into Dirksen in a federal court and trying to get your client off as a not guilty verdict. You've done it many times, many more than most lawyers in Illinois. Congratulations on that. Is that the crowning achievement, what you live for every day?
Probably true, although you'd be surprised. Even a civil case, but you know, civil case, even if it's a few days, it's still the intensity level and the prep and your anxiety level is still exactly the same. So, you know, we recently had one in state court at the Daly Center. It was the same thing. It was only like a three-day trial, but the intensity that you put into it and the drama, you know, it was all there the same. But yeah, I would probably, if I had my choice, probably try a criminal case to a jury versus a civil case to a jury. But they're both a lot of fun and present great challenges. And, you know, you feel like the same stress, the same intensity, you know, a couple of days feels like a week or 2 weeks. So there's a lot of similarities.
Cool. Patrick Dolan, let's get this question in.
Sure.
I'm not going to read this whole thing. Yeah. I just read you the text offline.
Yes.
It is long, but I appreciate the detail, 847. Basically, they worked at a company for 20 years, a global financial institution. They're 58, and they've got a lot of great reviews over the year. They don't take their vacation, which I wanted to step in and say, find a way to do it, I guess, but I think you should try and take your vacation. They get like 38 days a year. They took 1.5 last year. That does not seem sustainable to me. Anyways, this person got their first little ding on a review because something wasn't done as quickly as the boss would have wanted. The boss is saying, look, this is not a big deal. This isn't so severe. But the texter's wondering, well, no, there's some guidance on maybe this could impact my bonus. They're worried that maybe this is the start of them trying to push them out, maybe. He's got 40 weeks of severance there on the line, having been there 20 years. Any thoughts on something like this? Have you seen something like this before? I'm sure, right?
Many times. So let me start with the PTO issue. So if he doesn't get a reasonable opportunity, and that's the phrase it's used under the law, to take that PTO, he's got to be paid the PTO. Okay, that's an exception.
What is a reasonable opportunity? Meaning if they slam you so much with work and deadlines and it's not humanly possible to get it and take your PTO, they have to pay you for that PTO.
Yeah, and the bar is actually not even really that high. That's a pretty high bar. But if you say, you know, I want to take the week of Thanksgiving, they're like, geez, they really can't because that's super busy for us, blah, blah, blah. Pick another week. How about this week? No. So if there's some back and forth that you can point to, you should be paid the PTO, which is an exception to Illinois law. You have to be paid PTO when you leave, no matter how. If you quit, terminate, it doesn't matter. You have to be paid accrued unused. Otherwise, it doesn't have to roll over specifically, all of it, you know. And so that's my concern there. If he wasn't given a reasonable chance to take it, it needs to be paid back. That's number one. Number two, if your boss dings you for something that you don't think is appropriate that affects your bonus, not necessarily illegal, I would bring in HR for sure for that conversation so you can express why you think that being criticized for something is wrong and kind of work through it and focus on the fact that maybe that drops your rating or something like that and it does affect your bonus. That's sort of layer one, John, to why, what's really going on.
Could there be something underneath?
Yes, he's in his 50s, right?
Late 50s.
Late 50s, so is he...
Still a young person.
Still a young person, but it's in the protected age discrimination category is my point.
So am
I. Is he... Right. Yes, you are. Is the start of being pushed out? Why? Why is he being pushed out?
Are they trying to leave breadcrumbs of negative reviews to an ultimate termination?
Yes, and if this is something so small, I'm sure other people haven't been terminated for it, but if his rating is dinged, you have to pay attention to what happens next. So you got to bring HR into that process right now.
Can they bring you into this process right now?
Yeah, I would advise him not explicitly. I counsel clients into that kind of scenario all the time. I'll help you write the email. This is what you say to HR. This is what you say to your boss, you know, that kind of thing. So I'll kind of ghostwrite some of it with them and help them to phrase certain things in a way that's productive and not too aggressive. And so I'll do something like that. But if it really kind of hits the fan, then I step forward.
I appreciate you saying it hits the fan. Thank you. And that's what I was going to get at is that you don't want to, this guy or gal doesn't want to send a letter from a lawyer right now.
No, it's
but
too early.
That doesn't mean they can't hire you to coach them through the next couple of steps. And I would say the earlier is the better, not to try and pressure someone to hire you or another employment lawyer, but just then you can start having records of what's happening, Patrick, and advise what records they should be getting now.
Yes, and they can also, I can also help them think about issues that they may not be thinking of. For example, age discrimination. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. Like, they'll be like, okay, why do I want to say this? I'll explain why you want to say this. You look around the curve in terms of what's coming next.
309, how does unlimited PTO, a lot of companies do this, get figured into a severance package when you get fired or leave? That's a great question.
It's a great question. So unlimited does not eliminate the obligation of an employer to pay for accrued unused PTO when you leave. The issue is you got to keep track of it. Okay, you got to keep track of it. If you didn't use any, then remember, Illinois has a PTO law that has a minimum set.
2 weeks,
so,
right?
Yes, and so you're allowed to use that time, but companies think they can get out of it by just saying unlimited PTO in terms of paying you when you leave. That's not the case.
So if you took 3 days of a limited and you have unlimited pay, the company can't be like, well, they chose only 3 days, that's all they get. No, they would then get 11 days pay.
That's correct.
No, 7 days, excuse me.
Right, that's essentially it.
312, I think, referencing the conversation of the person in the global financial company. I'm an employer. I would consider that person a whiner if they did that.
Wow. Well, okay, I respect that opinion. Maybe they are a whiner. I'm just saying if the employee objects to being criticized, and it affects their bonus, so it's money taken out of their pocket, they have every right to point out to their boss and to HR why they think the employer is wrong.
Yeah. I mean, like, part of me just is like, okay, guy, you're an employer, and you'd consider that person a whiner if they did that. But you're right. Not that this texture is, but there are some things that, and this is what you coach people on. You want to be your best advocate as an employee. But there are lines. There are ways in which you can talk your way into just being the person that's going to be out the door. It is a fine line between being someone that advocates for yourself and being seen as someone by bosses is just like, oh, God, this guy again.
And you know what, John? That's exactly why I help people write those emails. Because at that point, you want to be factual. You want to be objective. You don't want to use a lot of hyperbole. You don't want to be super aggressive. You want to point out where you think the criticism of you is inappropriate and inaccurate.
We call that ChatGPT, chat get Patrick to do it. You like that? Yeah, don't use.
There we go.
Mike, anything you want to add to that?
Not a word.
Great.
All not right, a word. It was said so well by Patrick. Patrick's going to do the lead into our next you have a segment.
I've not approved or heard of this, and I'm just putting this out there. I'm not being held responsible for anything that happens next.
Is like this, like the charcuterie board, we sustain the objection.
Okay, so this next segment is.
Do you get that?
It's the Jaws theme, I know. Yeah.
So it leads into our segment on the show, which is so popular, called Shark Bites.
Okay, well, I'm excited. Patrick, do this again. Here's how you do it. I'm a radio professional. Okay. Do that again.
Dun, dun.
Now,
dun, dun.
It's time
dun, dun.
For
dun, 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 dun.
Shark dun, dun. Bites. See, a little production would have helped.
Very
there.
Well done. Yeah, we wanted to spring it on you, though. Well, just to remind everybody, this segment of the show dates back about 20 years. Ooh. We had a client, Mike and Pepe Fowler, who now live in, I think, Atlanta area. But we had to travel together. There are my clients, but we had to travel together to several cities as part of the case. And they noticed that I had a passion for going to kind of the offbeat, unknown spots. Unlike our host here, John Hansen, who would probably end up at Sbarro and Noodles and Company, and you know,
Arby's, Potbelly today.
Arby's, charcuterie board.
I'm looking for the unknown place. I'm looking for the local,
the mom and pop spot.
Yeah. So, any legitimate trial lawyer, when they go throughout the state of Illinois or the country, wants to find those hidden gems. So I just found one, guys, this week, and as you can see, I'm excited.
What city was it in?
So does our radio station reach Bloomington Normal?
Sure does.
Okay, so maybe some listeners are familiar. The Luca Grill.
I thought you were about to say Avanti's, and I'm like, everyone knows Avanti's in Bloomington.
No. The Luca Grill in downtown Bloomington, just a couple blocks from the courthouse. I asked opposing counsel, hey, man, do you have a legitimate sandwich shop here other than a franchise place? And he thought, scratched his head, said, oh, it's not really a sandwich shop. I'll go to Luca Grill. And I know John would love to hear this, but the Baldini brothers opened it back in 1936, where it has remained ever since then. And so I dined on the Louis sandwich.
Is it Luca Baldini?
And then, and I got the Baldini pizza to go, to take in the car for the ride home. So very exciting. Big shout out to Luca Grill in Bloomington, Illinois. If you're a legitimate trialer and you find yourself in town, you should be going there.
Is it L-U-K-A?
L-U-C-C-A.
And the cool thing about it is it has, on all the walls, it's like filled with sports and college pennants. P-E-N-N-A-N-T-S.
Okay.
Not pennants that you're seeking.
Did something wrong.
For doing something wrong. Yes. But just a classic interior. Met the owner. Great place.
I've been there.
Maybe we can broadcast live.
I've been to Luca Grill.
Can we broadcast live someday from the Luca Grill?
If they pay enough,
okay.
I'll go anywhere.
Where did you eat when you were there?
At the Luca Grill.
No, what did you
What did you get?
I think I had the pizza. I think I had the pizza.
Did you get the Baldini?
Because it's right on East Street, right?
Where it's right on a corner.
Where they split. Bloomington has the downtown that has the two roads that then merge together a little further north.
It is by one of those roads, yes.
Yes, exactly.
On a corner.
South of Locust.
So it was extremely exciting. I hope my wife is not listening because she would hear that I got the sandwich and then I got the pizza to go.
Right.
So hopefully she's not listening.
Exactly. Well, I know she isn't because she called earlier and said that she missed the whole first half.
Right.
Let's take a break more. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Please call in 312-981-7200 with legal thoughts, Bears thoughts, whatever's on your mind. 219 worked as a contractor for an international company, Patrick, for 32 years, and they, quote, treat me pretty good. Early on, though, I was hired on as a company employee for a few weeks. I didn't like it, so I went back to being a contractor. It was like employee Wednesday, contractor Thursday, they were saying. So it was quick. Could this person ever claim that they remained an employee? Nothing really changed except job function and benefits. I've followed up to find out what they're looking for at the end of this. Are they trying to say that they were an employee to collect benefits or severance or sue them for something? I don't know. But suffice to say, this contractor employee thing is a delicate one that companies and employees have to navigate carefully, right?
Yeah, and they misclassify it all the time. They call somebody a contractor to avoid paying benefits or severance or whatever it is. That happens pretty often, and there's a lot of lawsuits, typically class actions in terms of misclassifications of employees as independent contractors. You know, there's a really long test. You know, it depends if you look at the IRS test or the state of Illinois test or the federal Department of Labor test. But there's a whole bunch of different things to determine whether someone's an employee versus a contractor. The big threshold issue is control. Does the company have control over your schedule, what you do, how you do it, who do you report to, all that kind of stuff? If they do, you're an employee. Even though you have an independent contractor agreement, et cetera. So it's not the terms of the agreement that govern whether someone's a contractor or an employee. It's actually the relationship between the employer and the employee. So you have to really look at how much control does that employer have over you in doing your job. And people are misclassified pretty often.
Yeah, especially if you're a contractor and the employer's saying, here's the days of the weeks you have to work. And if the contractor says, no, I can't that day, they say, well, you've got it. That's not a contractor relationship.
Yeah. And
that's an employee.
Yeah, and you've got to maybe come into the office. You got to work 9 to 5. You got to work for this person. The project you're working on has to be done X, Y, and Z way. So there's a whole bunch of different stuff. And how you're paid. Are you paid every 2 weeks versus a project basis? If it's every 2 weeks, that's really strong evidence of an employee.
630. Sorry, I haven't listened to all the conversation. First of all, that's your first mistake, 630, but we understand. Or maybe that's the first thing you've done right all day. I don't know. Why do some companies break out sick time and others consider it all time off as PTO and then build it into the PTO? You're smiling. Why?
Well, it depends what the company's trying to do. Oftentimes, they don't want to deal with designating you as sick, so they just put the whole bank together. It's easier for them administratively. But if it's all PTO, they got to pay it out when you leave.
Yes.
Typically, sick time not. So
there's a benefit to both.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Are you feeling left out of this conversation, Mike Leonard?
No, I feel refreshed.
Patrick, have you checked your text line? Because during this last segment, Mike has texted us asking if you can talk about something. Mike, you are more than welcome to just bring it up on air.
Well, I like to defer to you guys. I'm more of a deferential person, so I don't want to hog the show. I feel like I keep track of how many minutes I speak.
That's why you're a successful
versus Patrick,
trial
and then
lawyer.
We always know John speaks three times as much as us.
Paid to.
So we just got to keep that. We just got to keep that balance.
I see this notification come from Mike Leonard. I'm like, you're right here, buddy.
I just can't break in and stop. You're unstoppable, John.
Tell you what, let's leave that aside, Mike. How about this post-trial motion you argued this week about one of the issues was that the former attorney provided gummies to the client during the course of representation.
You read that correctly.
What's that all about?
Isn't that a good issue? So we took over a case. It was in a state court criminal case. We took it over, unfortunately, after all these things happened. But the client pled guilty to a very unfavorable plea agreement and ended up getting a sentence from the judge of 212 years.
Jeez.
Wow.
Which is absurd.
That's a lot. Okay.
Which is absurd in
my opinion. For what? Can we say what it was or no?
For viewing pornography.
Okay.
That's like a cat's life.
So in any event, we were retained to try to withdraw the guilty plea and to try to reduce the sentence.
That's hard to do, right?
And so it's hard, yeah, because they don't want to let you get out of that.
This is Mike.
And so we had a hearing on it, but one of the big issues that was raised prior to the hearing and at the hearing was that the former attorney had provided gummy bears of the, you know, illegal variety or legal variety, however you look at that issue, to the client during the course of representation on multiple occasions, which we argued was a violation of the Illinois rules of professional conduct. Mm. And here's the interesting part. So we had the hearing. The attorney was required to testify, and he asserted his Fifth Amendment rights against answering all these questions on cross-examination about
which I was allowed to do.
When he provided the drugs and how he did it and where.
And why.
So he asserted his Fifth Amendment rights, which I've never seen. You know, most, you know, you would expect the attorney would just say, no, that never happened. But it was pretty unbelievable and heated. But the weird thing was, simultaneously, when the state asked him questions before I got the chance to cross-examine him, they, you know, tried to elicit testimony from him where he was basically trying to act like it didn't happen. But then when it turned to cross-examination, he asserted his Fifth Amendment basically the entire time. So it's going to be a heck of an appeal is all I can say.
Was the attorney trying to, like, placate the... like calm the defendant down, or there's
I think there's part of that, but wouldn't you think? I mean, one of my arguments is like, come on, anybody who hears that, anyone in that courtroom who's sitting there listening that day, and anyone on the street, if you tell someone, hey, my attorney is giving me gummies, you think there's something wrong with that.
That seems a little off to me, for sure, right, at the very least.
I don't disagree.
229 now, 230. That means we got to go to news. 312-981-7200 for your questions. By the way, we got Peter Greenberg coming up at 3 and then Hamp and OB at 5. So we'll get our pregame at 5 and then they'll take us an hour and a half pregame up to Blackhawks pregame. So back-to-back pregame shows. And then we'll have Blackhawks hockey. They're playing Nashville. And then Hamp and OB will be on at 10:30. So that actually like works out really well for the program. You'll get your pregame for both the Bears and the Hawks. Hawks and Bears will play simultaneously. And then we'll get post-game. So pre-game, game, post-game. You all got that? You got that written
down?
I almost feel like people are going to be angry when the Hawks pregame comes on because they're going to be so bear-focused, don't you think?
No, people love
not in this station.
Yeah.
Oh.
No way.
No, we,
you don't
no
have
way.
To be defensive. I mean, I'm just talking I'm as a citizen of Chicago.
I am a little bit.
No one's going to be mad. I think people that love the Blackhawks are going to be listening to Hawks. I think everyone's going to be doing the same thing I'm doing.
Charlie, Romoyola.
We're listening to Hawks, watching Bears, some version of the two things, keeping an eye on one or the other. So.
Can you tell, like, is there data, say, for instance, like at the end of the month where you can tell if there's a reduction spike because there's some other big event going on? Can you is it that specific?
All we know is that when Mike Leonard comes on, our ratings plummet.
It spikes.
And then they immediately return at the end of a Mike Leonard segment. Other than that, that's the only data point we ask for.
It's like an inverse bell curve.
I was going to say, I heard a lot of radios flipping off when John was, when every time John's talking, then the radios come back on when we're talking.
The problem is I made the joke first, and
it's kind of like my daughter used to do. My daughter used to hear her brothers make a joke and tell the same joke later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, this
didn't
is
work then either.
847, a question for you, Mike Leonard. Do you handle cases in other states other than Illinois?
I do, John. I do.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah. So the thing about handling cases out of state is, and on the federal level for federal courts, it's relatively easy to what's called pro hoc in, meaning you're a lawyer from another jurisdiction. You can sometimes get admitted to that federal court on a permanent basis, so you could have cases there all the time, or that court might require you to just get admitted for that case.
Is that like a quiz you got to take or something?
No, it's just all local rules. For instance, the big jurisdictions that have lots of lawyers are, you know, the argument they're trying to basically protect their own. They're going to make you have a local lawyer do the case with you. Other jurisdictions let you be admitted to that federal court jurisdiction forever, right? So, for instance, in Hammond, Indiana, there's a federal court. I'm admitted there. I could practice there without anybody else forever.
Future home of the Chicago Bears.
I hope not. Oof. But other places, you have to do it on a case-by-case basis and or have local counsel with you. And then on the state court level, a little bit different because you're not admitted in those states.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of those would require you to what's called pro hoc vice in, meaning you get admitted for the case. And typically they would require you to have local counsel with you on the case. But yeah, that happens all the time in
state
and federal
court. What's that one called? Pro hoc vice?
That
sounds like a
Latin.
Sounds like a nice champagne or something like that. Something fancy.
To go with your charcuterie board.
Yeah, let me get a little pro hoc vice here with this. With this fine.
Well, you're learning something today here, John, you know?
it's actually
fun to go to other jurisdictions to try cases.
You like it.
It is fun. You're definitely even more of the underdog because they don't know who you are. You know, you got to kind of earn the respect of the court. You have to kind of understand what that judge is like.
Do you roll in like Joe Pesci in Alabama or no?
No, I don't wear the tuxedo. I don't dress like Patrick.
Do you love My Cousin Vinny?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Such a good movie. I mean,
phenomenal.
It's not only funny, it's just brilliantly done. I mean, you've got these high power actors in almost every role. I mean, you've got Joe Pesci. You've got Marissa Tomei. The judge is a longtime respected character actor. I forget the actor's name who portrays the prosecutor. Just an incredible actor who's been in so many other things. Like, they loaded this cast on this little kind of rinky-dink comedy. And it really shows. I think that's why that movie has lasting power.
Oh, it's held up. I mean, so many attorneys who give presentations on trying a case or any aspect of litigation, they can't help themselves but to put a slide in from there or lesson learned from there. Because it's true. There actually is some legitimate lawyering things that happen in that movie. So they must have had a good advisor consultant. But yeah, that definitely holds up to the test of time. Other lawyer movies and shows are so ridiculous. Yeah. You're like, come on.
Yeah. Okay, but on that note of weird things happening in different courts, not to the level of My Cousin Vinny, but are there customs or things that you have to kind of vibe out in a different court versus the ones you know in your own backyard?
100%. Sure. It might be as simple as like the podium rule. For instance, I was trying a case in federal court in St. Louis, and this judge in this particular courtroom had a very strict podium rule. Like, your leg or your arm does not go outside the confines of that podium. And he, you know, a couple of times he gave me some really intense looks, like, you're moving a little bit off that podium, counsel. So yeah, you have to know and appreciate those rules. Plus, I mean, it's just like anywhere else. A judge, just like if you were doing a business transaction, you have to understand what that person's like. It'd be helpful to sit in their courtroom for a little bit, even on a court call, just to kind of see how they comport themselves and how they treat the litigants. And because some judges might like a joke, others might not. And a lot of lawyers don't like my jokes at all. So
that's pretty consistent. See, it's actually like in state court, you can get hometowned much more easily, but state courts usually require local lawyer, and that's your saving grace.
Yeah.
Like, do this, don't do that kind of thing.
That can be helpful. Yeah.
A lot of times that sort of is your entree. So let's say you're trying a case in another state and you have local counsel who's well established, that's going to help your credibility and, you know, the respect in terms of how the court treats everybody because you're aligned with that person.
Yeah. I have one question. This is getting a little deep into our American system, and then we'll get to a phone call from Lee, and then if we have time, whatever Patrick wanted to say.
I don't think we have time for that. Just cut his mic off now. Send him off for the game.
Being at home.
So you deal with a lot of different federal judges all across this country. Oftentimes, our only interaction with them is a court opinion that makes the news that we hate or we love, and we only know them as a name on a piece of paper. Do you find, having practiced in so many different places, that you ultimately, the vast majority of judges, even if there's little disagreements on how they operate or what they do, you find them to be respectable individuals who are smart, well-prepared, and able to do the job?
Be careful.
Oh, 100%. I mean, yeah.
Are you just saying that or no? I mean,
no,
really?
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, our jurisdiction in Chicago is literally one of the best in the country, and I think people would agree with that. And it's not only the quality of the judges, but the size of the docket, both criminal and civil. So these judges here are particularly highly respected. But yeah, just because someone's a federal judge doesn't mean they can't relate to other humans. You know, the idea, it's a federal court judge, so they can't know what they're doing. They come from all different backgrounds. Lots of former prosecutors, a decent amount, but much less former defense lawyers, and then a lot of them from large firms, civil firms, right? But, you know, these people are extremely competent and qualified. And, you know, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with the ruling you get, you know, you're not usually walking away saying they weren't fair to you. They didn't try to get it right. I mean, these guys work incredibly hard. Guys and women work incredibly hard. So it's not like they don't put incredible amount of thought into every opinion they give. They do. And sometimes you disagree with it or you're disappointed with it, but it's not because they're not trying or they're out to screw you. It's just they're doing their job to the best that they know how.
Okay. Would you ever want to be a judge?
I would not, but more importantly, they would not have me, John.
Because of your sandwiches? Because you're bringing in Potbelly instead of... Okay, let's go to Lee. Lee, you're on WGN. Help us out, buddy. What's your question?
Actually, I'm a woman.
I could still call... As soon as I said buddy, I was like, oh, no.
Wow.
It's probably a woman. But buddy could be for women, too.
Sure.
I'm buddy with that. No.
Yeah,
no, we sustain your objection.
All right, sorry, Lee. Go ahead.
Lee, can you also, when you're done with your question, comment on the charcuterie board for the Bears game?
Okay, okay.
I like that charcuterie board.
Thank you very much, Lee. Oh, Lord. All right, keep going.
All right, so, Michael, I know you were sitting in the background for a long time, so I figured I'd call in.
Thank you, Lee.
That's somebody. if you were able to give me counsel on something regarding a case that has been closed for a few years now, but Wisconsin passed a law if, you know, meeting certain criteria that you could seek expungement.
Now, okay.
If my case occurred before the law was passed, is that grandfathered in and that could be applied to seek an expungement?
Before you answer that, Mike, I wanted to say, and Lee, I appreciate the phone call. You're not giving specific advice to specific cases, but generally speaking, to Lee's question about expungements and when that happens, is it all down to the letter of the law and what they say? And you could probably take the question offline, too, to give specific advice.
Yeah, that's going to be statutory. So the question is going to be, does that law apply retroactively or not? I don't know the answer off the top of my head. I'd be glad to talk to you about it, you know, offline or during the week. Feel free to give me a call.
Actually, I got to ask, Lee, do you know what the law says? Does it say it applies to cases that are already closed or happened before a certain date?
I don't remember reading that, if it's, you know, specifically stating if it's, you know,
Right. Well, you can always text this phone number, too, if you happen to know the law you're talking about, and we can look it up. Or you can follow up with Mike. Mike, what is your phone number?
312-380-6559.
312-380-6559. And, Lee, I'll give that number once or twice more before the end of the show, okay?
Lee, I will be watching the game between 7 and 11. And since you're asking about Wisconsin law, you're not a Packer fan, are you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Go Bears.
All right.
I'll take your call.
Hopefully Lee didn't just say that because you asked her that and put that to her.
At least I didn't call Lee buddy.
That's true. Lee, I'm sorry. Have a good day, okay?
You too. Thank you.
But generally speaking, just to address the issue, because it is a Let's Get Legal show, most laws are not retroactive unless they specifically say in the statute that they are. So she could look at the statute, or we can if we knew what it was and look, and if it doesn't say it is, it's probably not.
But the thing with something like an expungement law, typically that would be a law that goes in effect, says here's how you can expunge under what circumstances. So typically that would be, because you're talking about things that happened in the past. Long ago.
Yeah, I understand.
It'll usually outline the rules.
Yes, 100%. And it's usually not retroactively.
But expungement usually
is different.
But expungement laws are usually retroactive in their principle.
That's the whole point of it.
The question is, how long ago do they go back? How far is the reach? Okay. It's probably a simple answer, so we could definitely look it up.
We'll take a break, and maybe we'll get that text from Lee, my good buddy.
Right.
And the 773 says, listen to you guys from Longboat Key, which I assume is in the Keys.
It is.
And they sent a photo of a charcuterie board.
Wow.
Which I'm not going to say what it says there, but they have a play on words about sharks and something else. But it's a cool charcuterie board. It looks great.
As we've talked about offline, I think the only acceptable charcuterie board in Chicago for the game is one that would have cut up Polish sausage and cut up Italian beef. Yeah. With American cheese slices. That's Chicago.
I like ketchup on my hot dogs, Mike. We're not all the same.
Wow.
Doesn't I just mean really, I lose my card. I can
sustained.
Normally, I'd be okay with the cheese, but not today. There can be no cheese on the board.
I love what Wiener Circle is doing with the hot free hot dog things. Yes. And like, it's really cool.
Not having cheese is...
No, come on. No cheese.
On what? The charcuterie board?
For the Packer game? There's no. That's not acceptable.
Oh, yeah, you have a cheese grater.
Yeah, cheese grater. I'm just saying you can't have cheese cubes.
Yes. John, don't you understand the irony? People are breaking out cheese graters, John.
Yeah. They're wearing them on their heads.
Anti-Packer.
If I shred it, can I have it?
Yes.
Okay.
You can. If you have to shred it, though.
By the way, we've been corrected. Longboat Key is not in the Keys. How dare we get that wrong? It's a town in Florida. But not in the Keys.
I think my parents went there once, so I thought you might be wrong. I just didn't want to speak up and say that.
I mean, it was a good guess, though. One can assume.
Key in the name. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm not beating myself up.
Well, Key it doesn't West. Mean that River Forest is in the middle of a forest, John. Just going forward.
Is there a river there, though?
Yeah.
There is, kind of isn't. It's got a great forest area, though.
Is there a river?
There is a river. There's the river. It's the Des Plaines River, right?
Oh, all right. Okay. All right. Yeah, it's true. That is true. I wouldn't really call it a forest, but yeah, there is a river.
Frederick Law Olmsted designed it to be the lungs of the city, is what a river forest was all about when it was built.
We do have a lot of trees.
Yeah. It's a great area. I love River Forest. Mm-hmm. Would you live in River Forest?
I do.
And you've never invited me over?
Well, there's a reason, John.
217 says, I'm texting from Springfield. And I feel so bad for... No, seriously. Springfield, Bloomington, Champaign... The people that don't have Amazon Prime.
They can't watch the game.
There's Fox 32. We get it locally.
Wait.
I know.
Can your viewer go to
stream
a restaurant
stream.
Or bar who is showing it?
I bet yes, because I bet some bars will have Prime loaded on up.
Just stream it. What do you mean? Why can't you stream it?
Because they don't have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, you have to have Amazon Prime for this game.
It's an Amazon.
You can't stream. You have to actually have a subscription.
Patrick, don't look at me. Sorry. We also locally there's a local broadcast.
Yeah, yeah, I know that.
But if you're not in the area of Fox 32 or wherever the local broadcast is,
you can't stream 32, nope. Fox 32.
Nope. So the person asked, I'm not sure who I should be peeved off at. Probably the NFL. I mean, they're the ones that negotiate these media deals, and they're the ones.
Money.
And the NFL is the one who picked. Every single network wanted the Bears-Packers game. They went with Amazon Prime. There was a really interesting article, I believe, in the Sun-Times about why. A lot of people are really hating on Prime, and there's a lot of good reasons. Texas is one of them. I'm not debating that. But Prime viewership is doing better than the precursor of Thursday Night Football did on NBC. More people are watching the Prime games than they were the national broadcast games. Yes.
And what's the
younger demographics, the age group. It's about 7 years younger.
Yeah.
And they are addicted to the Amazon Prime. And by the way, the average age is not that young. It's like 48 and a half compared to 53.
Really?
Of a Prime viewer.
I thought it was all about money. That's why they did it, right?
I mean, that's certainly a calculus, it kind of
makes sense because like the kids, like my kids who are in college, they don't have TVs.
Exactly.
They have the computer.
Stream everything.
And so it's probably more likely they'd watch on Prime. But that doesn't also seem to be your demographic for the Bears game.
217, buy Prime and cancel it tomorrow. Pay 1 month.
But what? Can you? But can you?
Sure you can.
Sure.
I mean, I guess I shouldn't put that out in the ethers.
You're on illegal, so you're telling people to form a contract and then breach it? Or just break it?
Not breach.
Terminate it.
Under the terms of the deal.
Yes.
Come on.
It's not like you're in perpetuity to Amazon Prime.
Yeah, most of these things, you have to sign up for a particular... usually you get a free trial. And then you put your credit card in, and they bill you for the rest of your life. Because you forget to cancel it.
Right, but don't if you don't...
Do the free trial.
I feel bad for Downstate. That's horrible.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
John, do something about it.
Okay, yeah. There's a 8708 says there's a 30-day free trial still on Prime.
Oh, beautiful. Okay.
Try that.
Do that.
630 says, is there a grove in Downers Grove? There's a lot of trees in Downers Grove. Are they all concentrated in one particular grove? There's a few forests, so yeah. But I'd call them groves.
But it's
this,
not
what we're experiencing right now is the dredges. Film. The last few minutes of the show where we're like speculating about suburban towns.
I was in for Lisa Dent for a week over the holidays, and it was the Friday final segment. And they came back to me, and I realized that my screen where I had all my topics was gone. And we just did soup for the last 5 minutes, and we counted down until we got to the top of the hour. This is starting to have that vibe to it.
Soup? What do you mean?
A little different talks. Like, we're talking about charcuterie?
Oh.
Very similar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. 312-981-7200. Patrick, anything else you want to mention today? Are you just all excited about Bears. Now we killed 2 hours at least, everybody.
Yeah, so that's all there I can think about is the Bears game.
That's always our goal, just to kill 2 hours. Yeah. Well,
I feel between myself, Hochberg and Lou providing great information to all the listeners. We maybe less so, but all of us today in Chicago, all we're killing really time. Doing is killing time.
Oh, I know. I mean,
till seven.
As much as I love to see you, I can't wait to get out and like figure out the game plan for the game. You know, all that sort of stuff.
And I guess that's where I want to end, because two things. One, you can think both these things at the same time. I think we're on the cusp of what could be a really cool couple of years in Chicago for the Chicago Bears football team. Ben Johnson looks like the real deal. Caleb Williams, the second half of the season, looks like the real deal. Great stuff is happening, and try to enjoy it as hopefully maybe the beginning of a ride. But also keep in your mind as you enjoy the game tonight or get ready for it, this anticipation is the fun of it. This anticipation of tonight is what we should soak in and remember. I not only want to win tonight to beat the Packers and continue the road to the Super Bowl, I want another week of this chase, this feel, and enjoy it, because while I do think this is the beginning of great stuff, nothing is guaranteed in the NFL. We've thought this before with Matt Nagy.
Well, think about the Kansas City Chiefs. Last year's champ aren't in the playoffs. Mahomes injured and out for at least a year.
At least they got a couple championships. I'm just saying how
quickly things change.
Look at the Washington Commanders.
Yeah.
A playoff team to 4-12, I think, or 4-13 they finished this year. 5-13. You never know.
Well, this has been one of the best, not only from a Bears perspective, what a fun ride it's been, but NFL-wise, it's a year where you actually have six teams, eight teams, legitimately, you could say, make an argument for they could win the Super Bowl. That doesn't happen very often. And I think most people are super excited that the Chiefs are out, and it means somebody new who's not part of the sort of dynasty will get it.
I want people to enjoy the chase.
I agree. The fact that we have a good chance to win a playoff, we're in the playoffs, we have a good chance to win a playoff game.
Or two.
I mean, that hasn't happened realistically for a long time. That's super exciting.
Last playoff game we won was in 2011. I was having listeners go back and remember where they were just to point out at how long of a stretch that is. So I don't know why I'm preaching to the choir. I think everyone is enjoying the chase as much as we say it's causing internal rumbling. I think we all are feeling good about this. Just this is fun to experience. So I hope everyone enjoys that. I'm jealous of anyone that got into Soldier Field or that's going to get there, that's tailgating. I know that we're on at a lot of tailgates right now. The one thing they want to tune into is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. So hello to the South Lot at Soldier Field. I know you're all listening. They were doing a game where they took a shot every time you said sustained, Mike. It's a very we're big at Soldier Field, South Lot, right now, I can guarantee you. Let's just run through the table one more time in case someone missed it. Our final predictions for tonight. What do you think about Bears, Packers?
Didn't I say 34-24 Bears? Isn't that what I said?
10-point win. Okay.
Yeah. I said 27-24 Bears.
Close game that you said you had no doubt or worry about, but we're only going to win by three. I said 23-20. Mike, who should be reaching out to you, and how do they get a hold of you?
Anybody who is being investigated for, charged with, contacted by law enforcement at the state or federal level for any kind of criminal case. And also we represent whistleblowers, and we represent now on a defense level students who are facing university and college academic disciplinary or non-academic and academic disciplinary proceedings.
Phone number?
312-380-6559.
You took too long, Patrick, so I'll give yours. 312-332-7800 for Patrick Dolan of Conti and Dolan Law. Go Bears, gentlemen.
Go Bears.
Go Bears.
News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.